All right. So we are at a very familiar story in this lesson, which is lesson six, which always actually makes it difficult, right? Because we know the story, we've heard it, and unfortunately we've used it as a children's story. So it's kind of like a fairy tale. So I struggled with this because, again, there's a lot of information. We've got four chapters. A lot of information, very familiar. In fact, you can put your notes away. Your notes are just specifically going to do what we're going to do. But put your notes away because I want you to actually participate in this rather than what you can bring out is either your observation worksheets or your Bible, whatever is more comfortable for you to use. I just want you to be looking at the passages. So Judges 13 through 16. As I put this together, I realized all I'm doing is just putting down everything that's happening. And I don't want to always interpret for you. Part of us being in Bible study in this way, in inductive, is I want you to start pulling things out. And of course, I want you to do it two ways. I want you to pull it out of the scripture, but I also want to pull it out of your life. And so we did the life maps. So I thought, we would all put all of our stuff up here now. What do you think? Think that would be a good idea? Probably not, right? But Sherilyn came up with this great idea. She said, I'm struggling. She said, well, why don't we map out Samson's life? Oh, good idea. Yeah. So we're going to map Samson's life like we mapped our own life. And then we're going to take a look at Samson's life and do exactly what we did. Let's look at what we see in Samson's life. Let's look at the patterns. Let's look at what's going on there and see if we can't come up by ourselves what's going on in this chapter. So that's kind of where we're going here. But before we begin, I need to give you a little bit of, a lot of you didn't go on the orienteering thing, and so I'm going to give you just a brief thing about what we did there. Pat brought pictures, which was a perfect day to bring them, because we're going to talk about that. So I want to talk about compasses. Donna, did you bring your compass? Yes. Oh, there we go. Okay. So compasses. I have two compasses here. Although they look very different, they work the exact same way, right? If any of you has a smartphone, you actually have a compass on your smartphone. It's a lot harder to use. Because I was playing with it last night. It's a lot harder to use than a regular compass. But a compass is a very powerful tool, particularly if you're going to start a journey in a place that you've never been before, a place that you don't know where you're at, that doesn't have a path, or at least a path that's very visible. A compass is really important, which is what we did on orienteering. So we had our guides teach us how to use a compass. And of course, the most important thing you need to know to go anywhere is direction, right? And we talked about even the word orient. Do you remember what orient means, or the original meaning? To face Jerusalem is what it originally meant, to face Jerusalem specifically, not just the east, but Jerusalem. In other words, to face God's face, to face toward God. So in orienteering, you're learning to face toward what is constant. And what is constant is the North Pole. So north is constant. It's why every map that you'll ever see always has the direction north on it. It might not have any of those, but it will always have the direction north. Because north is our constant. We have to navigate ourselves and orient ourselves toward what is constant. Which makes sense then, doesn't it? That the original was to face toward God, the constant. So having a compass is really a very powerful tool. It really enables you to at least always know where the constant is. Because your path is going to meander, right? It's going to go all over the place. So even if you know where north is and you don't want to go north, let's say you want to go south, knowing where north is going to help you know where to go, right? Because you want to go the opposite. The problem with setting your bearings toward north is that there are two norths. So the two norths are
True North
and Magnetic North. So True North is the North Pole. It remains constant. Magnetic North is the pole of the Earth's core. So depending on where you are on the Earth will depend on where your magnetic north is. There are only a very few places on Earth that it actually would be the same as True North. So almost everywhere else, it is different than True North. So I don't know if this is luck or not. In Illinois, we are very close to True North. We are 3 degrees off. So it's very close. So it seems to us that, in fact, even the ranger said, 3 degrees, it's not much, so we can just assume that we're at True North. But that's not true, is it? Mm-hmm. So needing to separate the fact of True North from Magnetic North, even if it's really close, is really important. So I want to demonstrate how important that might be. And the reason they said that is because 3 degrees doesn't seem like very much, right? So I'm going to give the two people here the compasses because north is that way. So they're going to need to. I tried to figure out. I thought we'd all go outside and go walking. I don't think it's going to work. So I'm going to give you a compass and a compass. Okay. And I want you to face it. I want Julie, you to face it at the north on the compass.
Is this the top?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I should have seen
you. Maybe you should have given it to me. I said Barbie.
Okay, can you see? But Taylor, I want you to actually put it a little off north. So because we're in Illinois, I want you to put it a little off north. So about 3 degrees off. So, yeah, something like that, okay? I want you to hold it as steady as you can. So we have 3 degrees off of north and north. Which one's true north?
The three degrees off.
Yeah, so
3 degrees off.
Which way is it off?
Yeah,
true.
I don't really know.
That's important. It would be important.
Otherwise, it would be six degrees
off. Right, that's true. It would be important, except for...
They would say negative 3 or positive 3. It would be a declination, right?
Right, right. So, does anyone know?
Wait, why is she true north?
Oh, okay.
Why?
Because she's compensated.
She's compensating for where we are.
Because the compass is showing magnetic.
Okay? Does that make sense?
Oh, because the compass shows magnetic.
Right.
Right. Right, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. That was my assumption. All right, so what I want them to do is... As if they were going to use that as their bearing, right, where would they end up? So, Julie, let's hope this works. It's really hard to get specific because the compass doesn't move. I want you to hold this on your north. Sorry, this string on your north. See where it gets there. Try to hold that north. Annie, I'm going to have you hold hers. Taylor, if you would scoot as close as you can to Julie.
Sure. I'm only weird about personal space.
Well, I don't know.
It's a good thing I'm not doing. And bring your compass as close to her as you can. And remember that you're, and I'm going to ask you to do maybe 10 degrees just because we're in a small space. So face it to 10 degrees. And then put the compass really next to hers. Okay? Now hold this. There. Okay, put it almost, in fact, put it on top of Julie's. Yeah, like that. Okay. Now, Taylor, I want you to make sure that this is going in the direction of your arrow.
Well, Julie's going to have to
type. Julie's. Okay, I'll move the thing. You just tell me when it's there.
That's good.
Okay. I want you to notice something. Can you see the difference between the two? Mm-hmm. What's happening to the string?
It's getting wider,
right?
And this is only a few feet.
And this is only a few feet.
You're getting farther and farther away.
If I'm going to go from there to the North Pole, how close will I get to the North Pole if I go on Julie's calculations? How close will I be? I won't be close at all. I won't even be able to see it.
You'll never land on
right?
the moon.
No, exactly. Oh. Exactly. So do you see that 3 degrees, I think we have 10 degrees right here, right? 10 degrees makes a huge difference even here, even in this small space. So where I set my course, where I set my bearing, makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Even a little off makes a big difference. You see that? So the compass is really powerful in helping me, but where I set my compass makes a big difference, doesn't it?
I was helping my son with geometry last night, and I was trying to explain that exact same thing to him, because he was off a little bit. He's like, big deal. No.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes out.
The same, thank you, girls. The same thing happens with a plumb line. Right? I'm more, I came from a construction family, so plumb lines were a big deal. If you don't start with a plumb line, once you build a building, I mean, your building is going to go like this, even if it's a little bit off.
Yeah, when you put up wallpaper, when
you're painting.
Exactly. When you're laying floor, right? They always want you to have a true line, right? A true north. Line. Interesting thing is this compass is Sherilyn's, and on the back, let's see if I can read it. I should know this. On the back it says, in their heart, humans plan their courses, but the Lord establishes their steps. It's talking about two different courses, right? Mm-hmm. Man's course, the Lord's course. And that's kind of where we're going as we map out Samson's life. Looking at the two different courses that he gets to choose and how it makes a difference. But where it makes a difference, I think, will surprise us. Because I think we think it will make a difference in what God does when that's not the case. So this is what I want you to do. Using your scripture or your memory, we're going to go ahead and map Samson's life just like we mapped our life. So there's a lot of things going on. We're going to spend a lot of time mapping his life, but I hope as we map his life and we look back on it, we'll see the patterns and the paths he chose, and then kind of come up with, well, what's God doing here? Remember, always, whether you're looking at your map or Samson's map, anything you're looking at scriptures, it's God's story. Mm-hmm. And so we first have to ask, what's God doing in here? And then perhaps, how do we fit then into his story? What are the things that would help us to fit into his story instead of a self-help idea? So let's see how this is going to work. Go ahead and start me off with in the beginning of his life. So chapter 13. We're going to look at chapter 13. That's this map here. Just start telling me the things that are happening in chapter 13.
The angel of God comes to his parents and tells them that they're going to have a child who will be a Nazarite and serve the Lord set apart.
Okay. So it mentions his dad's name, right, which is
Manoah,
which means rest. So it's actually Noah's name with Ma, the M-A and then. So the angel of the Lord gives an invitation to rest. Here's an invitation to rest. So that, oh, where would we put that? So this is just like our map, so where would we put that?
Activities and events.
We can put in activities and events. I tend to want to put it up here. Because it's not an activity of Samson, right? Remember, this is Samson's map.
Oh, yeah.
So I would rather put it in positive. Would you say that was a positive?
Positive, yeah.
Okay.
From God and from his parents.
Right, exactly. So, an invitation to rest. And it's directed to the woman. This is a really fun and interesting thing when you look at that whole passage about it keeps on being directed to the woman.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is given directions. Will you follow these directions? Will you listen to these words? What does that remind you of? Mary? Maybe even farther back. Eve. This is a re-invitation. This is why it keeps saying to the woman. And the woman is to get the man. Because the woman is getting, this is almost like Jesus' invitation to Peter after he resurrects. And he says, Jesus, or Peter, do you love me? Same kind of thing. God is saying to Israel, to the woman, do you want to listen to my directions? Because what are the directions? Do not eat. Do not drink. Same directions, right? Mm-hmm. I'm telling you what's going to be good. Are you willing? And of course, here we have a positive boost because Mrs. Manoah takes the direction gladly, right? Okay, so what else? You said chosen to be a Nazarite. So I'm going to put that in positive influence as well. Chosen to be a Nazarite. Yeah, this was going to be tough. Means two things. It means separated to God and separated for others. So we tend to talk about holiness, sanctification, as separation. What do we always say? Separation
from the world, yeah.
The world, right? That gives us a very negative connotation, and it gives us a connotation of against, right? That is not what holiness means. It's not what Nazarite means. It really means separated to God for others. What he's going to be separated from is what? Not the world so much as
his selfish desires.
Yep, his own desires. Yep, that's what a Nazarite. That's what all of that stood for. So, good influence.
It's kind of like a priest, though, right?
I'm say what?
Kind of like priest.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. So how do the parents take it? What goes on with Manoah and Mrs. Manoah?
They ask for instructions. They want him to come back and tell them more how to do it.
Okay. So, yeah. So we have belief, reception, and...
And they make an offering.
Yeah, and they make an offering. And they ask for direction. If we're talking all this time through maps and leading, we have one of the first times that someone actually asks for direction. Isn't that interesting? Here we have Manoah asking, could you tell us what we're to do? Which is, what do you think? Positive influence, negative influence?
Positive,
okay. And what then happens? So Samson's born. They name him Samson, which means, anybody know what Samson means? You guys got to start doing your own word studies here.
Big guy, I don't know.
It means bright sun. Bright sun.
Bright.
Bright sun, like sunshine. Not S-O-N, S-U-N. So we have Samson, and what does it say that happens to Samson?
He sees a woman and...
Oh, before that. We're not there.
Oh, he was filled with the spirit from birth.
Yeah.
Is that it? Say it again, Karen.
He grew up and the Lord blessed him.
Okay, so three things, right? He grew, the Lord blessed him, and the spirit began to stir. Right? Does that sound like anybody?
Jesus.
Yeah, so yeah. We have... And what you're going to begin to see is there are going to be these little glimpses of... kind of a typology of Christ. You're going to see these little glimpses, and we'll talk about why we see that and what it's supposed to look like. Okay. So, that's basically what we have in chapter 13. That's the background to Samson. So even in your maps, although we didn't have womb, or even before conception, it's worth noting for you, what was the influence that brought you into the world? Mm-hmm. What kinds of things were going on in your families? Because those influenced you too. Not only was the influence there of his parents, we know from the passages before this, what was the influence before Samson even is born? What other influence does he perhaps have?
Well, Israel did evil again.
Yeah. Israel did evil again. So what we know is
there's two poles.
Yeah. There was a negative influence from Israel, and first of all, apathy, right? So at the very beginning of Judges, we had a whole bunch of stories about the apathy of Israel, the apathy to follow directions, right? That the Lord said, go in and destroy, make space for people to flourish so that you can be models of flourishing. So we have this apathy. We have it particularly, we see it in Barak and the men who won't lead, right? They've given up. And the interesting thing, the word apathy actually means refusing to be excited about something exciting. So that's really interesting as we're talking about a refusal to follow God's lead. It starts with apathy. So they didn't destroy their enemies. In fact, they lived among them. It was just easier to live among the enemies than it was to destroy. From there, we went all the way up to Gideon and Jephthah, and now we don't just have apathy, we actually have apostasy, right? Because we have Gideon and Jephthah both syncretizing the religions, right? They are adopting the enemy's worship practices, with Gideon having his own ephod and bowing down to it as an idol, and then Jephthah having his words replace God's words, and the vowing of sacrificing other people. So, I should have put this over here. I forgot this. All right, we'll leave it there. These are the influences and what's happening in Samson's life before he's even born. So it's what he is born into. So let's go into chapter 14 now. Now, Robin, what's the first thing we have Samson doing?
He sees a woman in Timnah and wants her as his wife.
Okay. So first he goes down to Timnah. Do you notice every time he goes into Philistine area, it always says he goes
down.
Mm-hmm. So you should have noticed that he's always going down to Timnah. The interesting thing is, he didn't go down to Timnah for a specific reason. He just went down to Timnah to see what looks good. What should he have been going down to Timnah for? Yeah. The Philistines are the enemy here. And he should have been going down there for only one reason. He should never have been going down there for any other reason. But he goes down there to see what he can see, right? Wonder what's down in Timnah. So right now, right off the bat, we know that he is starting to follow a path, right? And we had two paths already set out for him. And he's already following a different path. Oh, I guess I should put it up there, should I? Where should I put down to Timnah?
An activity.
Okay, so it's activities. Remember the activities we had, highlights and lowlights. What do you think? So he didn't think so at the time, right? But remember, he's making this map just like you are after the fact and looking back. Was that a good thing? So that's definitely on the lower half here. Do you remember, we've already talked about the Philistine enemies. Do you remember what the Philistines were known for? Two things. Anybody remember? Strong and mighty, so power is one of them. What was the other? That would be the weapons. That would be the power. What?
Beauty?
No, not beauty. Although they were actually they would have been considered almost like Babylon was. They were very highly cultured. So just the opposite of what we use the term for now. But there was one other thing that they were really known for, and that was alcohol. They were the Bacchanalia center. They were the ones who knew how to produce really good alcohol, and that's what everyone did when you went out, is you consumed alcohol. So, Timnah, Philistine. Let's put that in, what do you think, a negative influence, huh?
Which really is only a problem because he's a Nazarite. You know what I'm saying? Like, So he's like, I'm not supposed to drink anything, and I'm going to wear
exactly. Exactly. So he's choosing to go down to Timnah.
So why is that not indecision?
Well, I'm just saying that this is an influence. Okay. Timnah and the Philistine territory are influences, right?
No, they're down to Timnah.
Oh, down to Timnah. You know what?
Everything was well, activities and events for me.
You're right. And they can be sometimes both, right? Sometimes you might want to put both of them in there. So here we have a Nazirite and an Israelite who's been commanded two things. Destroy the enemy and keep your vows, right? Be separated to God for other people. And going down to Timnah violates both of those. Okay, so what happens after he goes down to Timnah?
He sees a woman.
He sees a woman.
I don't know why I don't have sees a woman here.
All right, let's say he sees a woman. I should probably get a marker somewhere. He sees a woman. And what does he want to do with that woman?
He wants to be his wife.
Right. He wants to marry her. He wants to be his wife. Has he even talked to her?
Probably not.
It just says he saw her, right?
She looked good.
Right. So the word is, she looks good to me. The actual, I don't know why they translated that way, because the actual words are, she looks right in my eyes. Oh.
It's
so sad in the NAS. Oh, okay. So in the NAS it doesn't, but those are the exact Hebrew words. She looks right in my eyes. And as soon as you see that, what do you think? Wait. He wants to do what's right in his own eyes. Oh, Samson is a picture of Israel. Samson is exactly what Israel does. Doing right in his own eyes. And so we have the whole life of Samson mirroring Israel. And he's the judge of Israel. And yet he mirrors all the ways that Israel has gone down that cycle, that downward cycle.
Sounds a lot like David's story, too.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, with his sight, he chooses to do wrong, right? He chooses what is right and wrong for him. Remembering, and we've talked about this so many times, that the choice of Adam and Eve was a choice to decide to make them the deciding factor of what's right and wrong. So we talk about that they disobeyed. That's really nebulous. It's really kind of fuzzy. It's the fact that they decided that they were the ones who could choose what is right and wrong, who decides what's right and wrong. Because we do this all the time, and we don't ever think about it as a disobedience, right? I get to decide what's right and wrong for me, right?
The independence.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not culture right now.
That's always been culture. Always. I get to decide, like, who should decide in my life what's right and wrong? Yeah, except that's not what people would tell you, and it's actually not usually what you would tell yourself, right? I get to decide what's right and what's wrong for me. And we always clarify it, for me, as if that makes any difference. But that's what's happening with Samson, okay? As soon as you see that he says, she is right in my eyes, we know that that's what he's doing. And so we know the path that he's choosing, right? So, for some reason, I have a whole bunch of things missing here, but go ahead. What happens then with Samson? After
he tells his parents, and they're like, I don't think you want to do this. And then he wears them down.
Okay. So, what I... First thing he does is he tells his parents, right? And what's the key word there?
Tell.
He doesn't ask. He tells, right? So here we know that he's allowing himself to be directed by his own desires, and now he's making others. He's going to tell them. You are, what does that sound like? Kind of like last week we talked about, right? I am going to be ruler. And I'm going to make sure you see that I'm ruler. I'm going to tell you that I'm ruler, and you're going to follow. So this is what he's doing. So telling his parents would be up here. I don't know what I did with that. And what happens with the parents?
They ask him, can't you find somebody of your own people?
Right.
Which was confusing to me going into the next verse.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because when I was reading that, I felt like they were sharing what was right to help him direct him to what was right.
Mm-hmm.
But it says no, that the Lord is leading and seeking.
Isn't that interesting?
So the Lord made him be this way.
No, the Lord didn't make him be this way. Who made the choice?
He did.
Did God know he would make that choice?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when it says the Lord was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, it makes me think that the Lord was going to have this thing come to pass.
Yes.
And so Samson makes the decision, and God's like, "Well, I'm going to leave this situation to accomplish my will."
Yes. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. So God uses, and I think, we get disturbed by that, that God uses Samson's desire to follow his own flesh, he uses it for his purpose.
Yeah.
That's what God's doing here, right? So we're actually going to put that in insights, right?
Doesn't he do that with everything, Jill?
Does he do it with everything? Well, let's go through the map and see, okay? Because it's a question we need to answer about God. We are so self-focused, and we so look at God's word as self-help for us to be the best Christians we can be, that we forget who's in control of everything, right? We forget that God's purposes will never be thwarted. We always forget that. And that's what you're going to see in Samson's life. Okay, so what happens next?
His parents go down with him.
Okay, so his parents go down with him, right? So they kind of give in.
I have a wedding feast.
Oh, wait. Lots of things happen before that.
The lion.
The lion, okay. So apparently Samson is apart from his parents, right? As they're traveling down. Notice who Samson is with or is not with every time throughout here. Because that also gives you an idea of what's going on with Samson.
But I think it's funny the lines in the vineyard, too. I mean, given what you were saying.
Yes, exactly.
About the whole situation.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Like you're here.
Exactly. So we have a lion in the vineyard, right? Should he ever, you see those vineyards? Every time you should go, Samson! Not a good place to be. It's going to attract your desires. Desires that are not going to fulfill who you are. But he goes there anyway, right? And a lion tries to attack him. And what happens? The spirit comes on him mightily, and he kills the lion, right? Okay. In and of himself, that self, him killing the lion in defense, is that good, bad, indifferent? What do you think? He wasn't supposed to touch dead flesh, but the lion's coming at him and it's alive, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, that's okay. It's the fact of what he does not do in that. He kills the lion in defense. What should he do then?
Should he have told
Karen? Yep, that's one of them. Karen, what did you say?
Purify himself?
Yes. He should turn around and go back and purify himself. He's a Nazarite. There's going to be accidental sometimes a contact with death, which is what is happening here. But he doesn't do it. And that's why we know the next sentence was Chris.
He didn't tell anybody.
He did not tell his parents. Oh, why not?
He's in a hurry to get married.
He's in a hurry to get married. And if he tells his parents, he's going to have to be accountable, right? Mm-hmm. So we have Samson alone, even though his parents are traveling with. We have Samson not telling. And we have that word again, not tell. So he does not tell his parents that he has killed a lion and that he has become defiled. Because then he would have to go back and they would tell him and then he would have to deal with that. So start looking at who he's involved with and what his words are or aren't. Okay. So this, I always get confused because there's so many lion episodes here. What's the next thing that happens? Okay, so he goes to find his parents. Oh yes, so now he went and talked to the woman, okay? So notice that he talks to the woman. He went down again, and he talks to her. He does not talk with her. So Samson talks to the woman. And again he says, she looks right in my eyes. Yep. So again, we have this over and over again. Samson is being led by his
desires
or his magnetic north, right? What pulls him? That's what Samson's being led by. So
his bios, right?
His bios, yes. So definitely here, his bios is being led. And what happens is it starts to go into psuche, right? Because his wills and desires, which is psuche, starts matching up with his bios. So we have bios and psuche hand in hand leading Samson along. So then it says, when he returned later to take her. I mean, every word here is just, you just stop and go, wow. So we know he went back again. He's coming down. And then what does it say?
He turned aside to look at the carcass. Uh-huh.
He turned aside.
In that vineyard.
Yeah, in the vineyard. He literally, what does Joshua tell him? Do not turn to the right or to the left, but keep looking at God. And he does just the opposite, right? He turns his head, and he's actually looking for the dead lion. Problem? He's a Nazirite. He's supposed to stay away from dead things, and now he's looking for dead things. So he's looking for the dead lion. And what does he see when he looks for the dead lion and finds it?
It has bees and honey in it.
Okay, so it has bees and honey in it. And what does he do?
He eats it and then takes it to his parents.
Is that a problem?
Yeah.
Yes.
Again, why is it a problem for a Nazirite to eat honey out of a dead lion? And he was told not to eat anything defiled, right? No, he's not to come in contact with and he's not to eat anything unclean. And that is definitely unclean. What does he do then?
Shares it with his parents.
Shares it with his parents. And again, does that not bring up Adam and Eve? I mean, totally, right? He shares it with his parents and he does not tell them. Why not?
Because he knows it's wrong.
Because he knows it's wrong. He knows it's wrong for him. It's not wrong for the parents, actually, is it? They're not Nazirites. Although they are Jews, they shouldn't be clean, undefiled. But the essence here is, it's wrong for him, therefore he does not tell his parents, because he doesn't want to be accountable. Do we see, even early on, that Samson allowing his magnetic north to lead him makes him more and more independent, right? I don't want to be accountable. I don't want to be around people. I don't want to tell people things that are going on in my life. Those are all signs that your bearings are set on your magnetic north, which it is for Samson. Okay, so he doesn't tell the parents about the defiled honey, and yet he shares the honey with them. So I'm going to put one extra one here, and I'm going to have a negative influence. It's not a negative influence on him. It's the fact that he is now a negative influence on his father, right? On his parents, right? So not only does he feed them the honey, but he has influenced his father enough to make his father do his will. So it's this twist of, instead of the father have Samson doing the father's will. We have him telling the father what to do. All right. I guess I could have added that on. That's all chapter 14, right? Are we done with chapter 14?
No.
No. What happens in chapter? What's the next thing?
Father went down.
Okay. Father went down, and what does Samson do? He makes a feast. What kind of feast?
Probably a drinking feast.
Yep, because what does it say? For the young men in Philistia, customarily did this. This is the Philistine custom. It is a drinking feast. It is a bachelor party that goes on for 7 days. So, Samson himself has now taken on the customs of Philistia. He has taken on not only the customs of the enemy, but has negated his vow. So he's not only coming in the vineyards, he's now making a feast to make sure everyone is drinking. And it doesn't say he is, but you're going to assume that, right? When the young men of when the young Philistines came and saw him, what does it say? Okay, that's a really odd thing, don't you think? Samson's making a feast, and the feast is the bachelor party, the engagement party, all the party for him to enter into a marriage with this woman. And the guests are not his friends. The guests are people that the Philistines bring. So I'm going to label this as paid companions. He doesn't have friends. The Philistines come and see him. And of course, what do they see? A very strong man, right? That's what they see. And so they bring him companions. They bring him, it's like, we're going to appease this very large man who wants to marry someone here. Okay, we're going to bring him friends, because he doesn't bring any himself. He makes a feast, and he doesn't bring any. Well, of course, because hopefully most of the Israelites wouldn't come for that feast, but... So I'm going to put that in negative influence. So now he has a drinking party, and he has companions that aren't really his friends. So what does he do next? Okay. Let's think about this riddle. Why in the world does he purport this riddle? You think it was a drinking game? Yeah, it was.
And just to kind of show his wisdom?
Yes, that's exactly it. He's trying to build himself up here, right? He's trying to make sure they know he is superior. Because the riddle he gives them is something they cannot answer. So it's not a fun game. It's a, I have superior knowledge. Because what he wants them to answer is what happened to him. And who was around when it happened to him?
Nobody.
No one. It is an unanswerable riddle. And so this is all about Samson building himself up. So this is actually a decision he makes, right? I want to build myself up. I want to make sure that people see that I have knowledge they don't. That I'm smarter than them.
But do you think it's also because he wanted to, like, tell the story of when he ripped apart the lion? And,
yep.
You know what I mean? Here's a way that he can overact about his strength, especially with people who are known to be strong.
Exactly.
And the Lord gave him a condom for him to do that, but, you know, we don't need to get into that. Let's just talk about how strong
he
is.
Okay, and that's a good point, because we're going to get to that point where he does want to display his strength, but he never, and that word tell is going to come up over and over again, he never tells where his strength is, right? It's always about him. So yes, it is about him building himself up. He has superior knowledge and superior strength. And he wants to make sure that that is seen and known. And he says to them, again, you have this word, tell it to me, right? He's telling them, okay, come on, you tell it to me. I mean, there is such playing here of, come on, show me that you're smart. When they can't, they cannot do it. So this is definitely a decision to humiliate, to put down the Philistines. What does he say will come out of this riddle?
30 linens and changes of clothes.
So who's going to get those?
Either they will or he will, depending.
Okay, on but how has he set it up? He'll get it, right?
You'll give me 30.
So not only is he trying to build himself up, he's trying to get 30 sets of clothes for himself.
Because there were 30 companions?
Well, that's he puts it that way, so it seems like they could answer. How many sets of clothes does he need? In the ancient world, yeah, one. So when he is making sure that circumstances come out so that he gets 30 sets of clothes, what are we going back to? What kind of a mindset?
Scarcity.
Scarcity mindset. I'm going to get more than I need. So not only am I going to build myself up, I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to insulate myself and make sure I get more than I need. So, I think that's a decision.
Would that be a way for him to kind of endear them to him, too, if he had their 30 clothes? Or they, you know, they would have kind of brought these companions to feel dependent on him a little bit, or kind of...
No, I think that would have been done just the opposite. Yeah. Okay, think about gambling. Whenever you watch, you know, TV shows or movies where there's gambling going on and somebody keeps raking all in, how do those people feel around the table?
Not so good,
right? In fact, a lot of times, depending on what kind of a movie it is, you're going to have retribution, right? They're going to get mad, right?
I was thinking maybe they would want, you know, they're thinking, okay, now he's powerful, and he's strong,
and he's
nice
got my
clothes.
Yeah, except that's not human nature, is it? I mean, human nature is, he just took my clothes. And he did it in a way that I could not have ever won. So they know that, which is why they go to where?
His wife's wife.
And what do they do to the wife?
Threaten her.
They threaten her. So,
and her
mom. The wife is threatened. The wife and the father is threatened. So she is in a no-win situation, isn't she? She is in trouble if she doesn't tell, because her fellow Philistines are going to be mad and kill her, right? If she does tell, here's the strong Israelite, what's going to happen there? She probably won't get married, which is death for a woman at that time. So she doesn't really have a good out here. And we have to think about the fact that the way that Samson has made his choices is starting to affect other people. Mm-hmm. Who did it first affect?
His parents.
His parents. Now it's affecting this woman, right? So we see that his choices start to affect. What does the wife do?
She just begs him, basically.
Yes.
She just wears him down.
She begs him to tell. And what is what's his answer to her at first?
I haven't even told my parents.
Okay, and what's wrong with that?
So why should I tell their first first allegiance.
So we see no cleaving, right? Mm-hmm. No intention of cleaving. And there wasn't really any cleaving to parents when he was under his parents, right? Do you see the independence that's starting to come? Bigger and bigger. So we have the wife pleading and him not telling.
I wonder if she had any feelings for him at all, you know?
Most of the time when you have this kind of a marriage, and you see this in old movies, feelings don't really come up with weddings and marriages, right? This is an economical decision for the woman, for the father. Is it good for her? Yeah, because without a marriage, a woman is doomed. So it would be rare that she would have feelings for him. And so what does Samson do?
I just wanted to add something.
Yeah.
Yesterday my daughter came home. She goes to Niqua, and she said they're from another culture to this point you're talking about. And they're 16 and they're married. Mm-hmm. And they go, I mean, she's never seen that, but they go to Niqua every day. They ride the bus and they had an arranged marriage.
Yep.
And she just says it amazes her.
Yeah, we can't imagine that.
Right.
I don't know. Sometimes I don't think that's
I
too bad
know,
a deal.
I feel like I have to say that.
The research. Yeah. The research on the success is...
It's very high. Because you go in it with complete... Oh, boy.
Yeah, commitment instead of happiness.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Again, commitment instead of happiness, that's exactly what we're talking about here, right? Do I go toward my desire of happiness, or do I go toward my calling, mm-hmm. right?
I don't think she's entirely honest with him either, though, in terms of, you know, why do I want to know this? So
yeah.
You can burn my house
yeah.
and my values
out. Right, exactly. Oh,
right.
Exactly. So... We have him finally telling his wife, right?
And then he calls her
on the seventh day.
On the seventh day, on the very last day, right? Right. And the wife tells the Philistines. And then what happens?
He says, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out.
Which tells us something about how Samson really feels, right?
She's a piece of property.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. She's just a cow.
Yeah.
That's all she is to him. That he can use.
Well, it's either I'm going to use her or you're going to use
exactly.
her.
Exactly.
And this time you use her.
That does not make me happy.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to use her. Yeah. So what does he do?
He went down.
He took everything they had.
Okay. How did he do that, though?
By the Spirit of the Lord.
Ooh, that's uncomfortable for us, isn't
yeah.
it? We do not like that. So we have, in the Spirit of Strength, he covers his shame, right? We understand that he is now has shame, and he covers it with violence. So we have... And then what happens? One other thing.
He gives his wife away.
The wife gets given away, and what does Samson do? Oh.
I don't think he really knows yet.
No, he doesn't know that yet, but what does he
when
do
he went
after?
Back to his father's
yeah,
house.
He went back yeah. to his father's house. What's
without
he doing?
Her, obviously.
Yeah, what's he doing?
Went home crying.
Yeah, he's pouting.
Yeah, angry.
He's angry. Mm-hmm. And so he lets his anger, his desire, his feelings lead him, right? I'm going to go back to Dad's house. And I'm going to show them, basically, right? Is that not how we do sometimes? We get angry with somebody and we pout because we think pouting will make the other person feel bad, right? Isn't that why we pout?
Mm-hmm. Well, the cortisol is dumping into our bloodstream from a few, you know, studies ago.
Yep.
So physiologically, it's not good.
Right. Right.
What's happening?
That's right.
You can't exactly think straight when you've got stress hormones.
That's
in your
right.
Blood.
That's right. So we have him angry and silent and goes home. All right. End of chapter 14. So his wife is given away. I don't have that.
To his companion.
To his companion, right. Well, were they true friends to begin with?
No.
No.
But it says who has been his friend.
Who has been his friend, yeah. So now we think, really? Samson had a friend? Probably not. So, chapter 15, what happens?
He goes back to kind of make amends with his wife.
How long does it take him?
A while.
Oh, long while. It's now wheat time, right? It's wheat harvest. So he goes back and visits his wife with what?
A goat.
Okay. So he visits his wife with a goat. Somewhere I read that was, I'm trying to think of the equivalent. Like if a man comes home with flowers, it's not to apologize. It's a prelude to sex.
Yeah.
That's what I read. So here's a goat, honey. If the husband brings home a negligee, maybe it's, that's what a goat is. A nice little. So again, he wants to go to this woman because she feeds his desires. That's all he sees her as is someone to feed her desires. Oh, there's a wife giving to friend. Okay. Okay, so he goes and visits his wife with a goat, and what happens?
The dad's like, oh, crud. He thought he was gone for good.
Yep, and?
He gave him to his...
You want my younger daughter?
Yeah. What does that sound like? Yeah. Right? Jacob, right? Yeah. Jacob and Beth. What you're beginning to see is all these little pictures of history so far of mankind and of Israel. You're seeing Samson kind of bringing all of these up. How does Samson take that offer? Not well. Do you think it had anything to do with the fact that he loved this woman?
No.
What do you think it had to do with?
Control.
Control. I'm not getting what I want, right? My desires are not being met. And if my desires aren't being met, and we've talked about this in the last couple lessons, if the gods that I'm after don't give me what I want, what will I do? I will go after more gods. In other words, if my desires aren't being met, I'll try to meet other desires. And now my desire is anger and revenge, right? So he goes, and what does he do to the Philistines? He ties the foxes with the tails, and where do they go?
Into the fields.
Into the fields, in the groves, in the vineyards. He burns their entire way of living. He completely takes away their ability to get life. So he burns their fields. And the fact that his desires didn't get met, and so he tries to meet more desires with revenge, what's the result of getting more, following after more desires? What's the result?
More revenge.
Yeah, more revenge. Other people going after their desires, right? Mm-hmm. What do the Philistines do?
They kill the woman and her father.
How do they kill him?
Burn.
Burn, right? Same way, right? So we know here that it is, it is a result. Samson goes after his desires, they don't get met, so he goes after more desires. And when he does that, it starts a whole chain reaction of other people going after their desires, right? No one here is stopping their desires. It's escalating more and more. After the Philistines burn his wife and father-in-law, then what?
He wants to take revenge.
Now revenge again. Mm-hmm. More desire. Going after more gods. Going after more and more of my desires leading. And so he
slaughters
them, right? But what does he say when he does that?
But then I'll quit.
Okay. And what's the first thing somebody says when someone says, you're addicted, or you can't...
One more time.
One last time, right? I mean, all the way back to this century, they're saying the same thing. We as human beings always do this. We follow after gods, we follow after desires, and it doesn't work, so we want more desires and more desires, and we always say, just one more. In other words, oh, I can quit any time. It's just that I have to finish this out, right? What it's a signal of is when you get in that cycle, when you start going down that path, your magnetic path, it's really, really hard to get off of that path. It's really difficult because now you've ingrained it and it has now become a habit. So I need to have more revenge, then I'll stop. That's what he says there. What does Sam do then? Okay. So he runs to hide in the cleft. Where am I going to put this one? It's a decision. What kind of decision do you think it would be?
I would say probably a good one.
Probably a good one. Where is the cleft, the rock? In Edom. Where's Edom? Anybody know? You look it up. Remember, the land locations are really important. Edom is in Judah. So, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Good.
It's
his people.
It's his people. So, even though it's not his tribe, it is interesting. What is Judah known as?
The leader of Israel.
The leader of Israel. Do they have a symbol?
Lion.
Lion. Isn't that interesting?
That's right.
Yeah. So he goes to Judah, the lion, the really leader of all of the Israelites, and he's going back to Israel. And he's going to, and when we see this, I mean, every time we've seen these words before, it's been a good thing, right? The cleft of the rock. Where else have you seen that before?
Moses,
right? And when Moses was there, where were? Why was he in the cleft of the rock? Because he wanted God's presence, right? And we see Jesus being talked about as the cleft of the rock. So here we begin to have some of these metaphors of him actually returning, perhaps, his face to God. And we have him going and hiding. It's the first time he's been vulnerable. It's the first time he's going back to Israel. He's going back to the strength of Israel. And he's going back to be able to see the face of God. So we have this interesting, all of a sudden, things change, right? His path is changing. All of a sudden, he's turned back to facing toward true north. Okay, so that's what's happening here with Samson. And we know that because of what happens there. So I kind of lost my place. What happens then? What happens at the cleft?
The men of Judah are like, why are you here? And mm-hmm. like,
so they bind him up, men of Judah bind him up and hand him over to the Philistines.
Okay. So we have... Mm-hmm. The Philistines looking for revenge, right? Mm-hmm. So they're still... they're still here, right? They're still with that cortisol in their bloodstreams. Sam has just slaughtered us all. Now we need revenge. Do you see this? Revenge, 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 revenge. It keeps going. It keeps going and going. So we have the Philistines looking for revenge. And Judah, how does Judah look at Samson?
He's brought the revenge on them.
Yeah, so Samson's now their enemy, right? They look at Samson as the enemy. So now his own people have disowned him. His own people look on him as an enemy. And the reason they do, we have to understand where Israel is at the time, right? We've already said they've been apathetic and they have been apostatizing. Israel at this time, no matter who they are, Judah or anybody, is trying really hard to not rock the boat, even though they're under submission of the Philistines, right? I don't want to rock the boat. I would rather look at my own as an enemy than get my enemies that are have control over me upset, right? So I don't want to rock the boat. That's why they look at Samson as the enemy. And let's just stop here for a minute. What do you think God is doing here? Why is God allowing Samson to look like the enemy?
So that the Philistines will come after him so he can kill more of them?
Yeah, right. So God is using this for his purpose, right? Allowing his judge, his deliverer, to look like the enemy so that he gets bound up, right? So we know that God is still using... Why did Samson get there? Because of lead him, his desires. God still uses the fact that he chose to use the Spirit. Every time the Spirit comes on him, he chooses to use it to fulfill his desires rather than his calling, right? And God still uses that because God's purposes will not be thwarted. You want to choose the wrong path? I'm going to still use that. Because my purposes will get done. Man, no matter what man chooses, is not going to thwart what God has already chosen. Mm-hmm. So we have Samson bound, right? Mm-hmm. And he exacts a purpose that he will be bound but not killed from Judah. it's interesting that Samson is bound, because that means that Samson had to make a decision about that, right? He had to, for the first time in his life. Can they bind Samson?
No.
Yeah, he had to submit. So we have a decision on Samson submitting to being bound. Samson's bound, and what happens? So we have God using his binding in order to get rid of the enemy. And how does he get out of the bonds? How does he get out of the bonds?
They just
snap.
The Spirit of the Lord comes mightily upon him, and he snaps his bonds. And then what happens?
He takes the jawbone of a donkey.
What kind of a jawbone?
Fresh.
Fresh. What does that tell you?
Oh, it's dead.
It's dead.
Yeah.
It's another dead animal. Mm-hmm. The Spirit is just coming on him, and he takes...
And then he sings about it.
A fresh jawbone. Okay. And that's important that he sings about it. Because up till now, he doesn't say much, does he? When you think of Samson, you should think of a very silent, strong, independent man. He doesn't tell much. We've seen tell, don't tell, don't tell, don't tell all the time. Don't tell. The only tells, rather than don't tells, are directing people to do things. But it's don't tell, don't tell, don't tell. And now he actually is speaking his boast, right? Look what I did. I killed a whole bunch of people with a jawbone. And this is really important, because what happens is, once he speaks his boast, he all of a sudden hears it. What have I just done? I've just killed with a jawbone of a freshly dead donkey. And what does he do with that? And the word is to throw off. This is a pivotal point for Samson. He throws off the defilement. Now, he doesn't turn completely around and go back for cleansing, but he does throw off the jawbone. What happens after he throws off the jawbone?
He calls for blood.
He's thirsty.
Yeah, he's thirsty, right? Mm-hmm. So he has need. And then what does he do?
Calls the Lord.
Okay. Important speech here, right? What does he ask the Lord for? Or what does he talk to the Lord about?
He thinks he's going to die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised.
Mm-hmm. What does he say before that?
Thou hast given this great deliverance by the hand of thy servant.
Yay! Woohoo! Do you see what happened? Once he spoke, once he actually said the truth, he also realized, oh, that wasn't my strength. That was God's strength. You have delivered, and you've used me as what? What's the word he uses?
His servant.
His servant. Oh, God is the strength. I'm the servant. And then, as only, remember, here's the thing we need to understand. Even when we turn back to face God, our personalities don't change immediately. But every once in a while, you'll come across a story of someone that has happened. But it's a slow process, right? He even said, when you go into the land, I will let you defeat your enemies little by little. So even with Samson, we have Samson turning his face to the Lord, acknowledging God's sovereignty, that he's his strength, that he's a servant only. And then he wants to ask God for water, right? How does he ask?
It's kind of whining.
It is kind of whining. You're going to let me die of thirst? What does that sound like?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Israelites in the desert, right? You're going to let me die of thirst? And then what?
And fall into the hands of the uncircumcised.
Which now all of a sudden he cares about. He wanted to be joined to the uncircumcised, and now, after he has been in need, he realizes, I don't want to be joined to the uncircumcised. Oh. So we see this huge change in Samson with this need, right? Because that's what precipitated, right? His thirst precipitated him calling. His being hunted down precipitating him running to the cleft of the rock. So you see that his need became the impetus for him turning his face. And he recognizes now his dependence. What happens when he asks God, in Samson style? What happens when he asks God?
Read the
verse
there. He opens up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it.
Okay. God splits the hollow place. Lehi is the word for jawbone.
Ew.
God, think about, yeah. I want you to think about this, because this is so vivid. God splits a hollow place in the jawbone, and water comes out.
The jawbone he threw
now,
right?
And he killed. Remember, it's in Lehi. We don't know whether it's the jawbone or not, but that's the picture that the author wants to paint here. Mm. That is, out of the jawbone comes water. Life for Samson, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I want you to start thinking about that.
So life comes out of the sin.
Not out of the sin.
Out of death.
Out of the death, right?
Okay.
Life comes out of death. I also want you to think about jawbone. The fact that he's using a jawbone, and it's a key word here because it's mentioned over and over and over again, right? Jawbone. Is there anything in your wild imagination where something like a jawbone, life comes out of?
Oh, well, think about us.
Are you saying the cave?
What cave?
The skull?
The skull, yeah. What are you talking about, Kristen?
Resurrection.
Yeah.
Golgotha.
Golgotha, that's the name for skull.
Well, now, is this a really twisted jump to our pelvis?
No. It is a type, it is a foreshadowing of life coming out of Golgotha.
Okay.
Out of a skull. That water comes out of a skull, right? That when life comes out.
That was used for death, right? Because the jawbone was used to kill people.
Right.
And so was Golgotha, right?
Right.
It was just
right.
A place where they were.
And notice, people. How did he get to the jawbone? He was bound, right? Mm-hmm. And he was bound because his own people disowned him.
Yeah.
Do you see this? Do you see that picture?
Yeah.
Every time we see Samson, and we only see it twice, that when Samson turns his eyes and follows God's lead, we see a foreshadowing and a picture of Christ.
Well, what's funny about the whole True North thing here is that it really has so much more to do with recognizing whose you are.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because, like, he was all about, like, it was me.
Right.
And as soon as he was like, oh, wait a minute, like, that's when he could actually...
Right. And when he turns his face toward God and recognizes who he is, recognizing that his identity is image of God, when he does that, then he reflects Christ, right? Forward. When we do that, we reflect what Christ has done in the past. Do you see? This is when he reflects. He's had the Spirit all along. And he's allowed the Spirit's power to fulfill his desires. And now when he turns and allows the Spirit's power to help him face God, to come that path, now he becomes... I mean, this picture of Christ here is so big. And it's not that he's Christ. It's that he is reflecting where life comes from. And that's what we do. In the same way that Samson does. And it's only then. So we walk around like Samson with the Spirit all the time, right? But if we're using it to follow magnetic north, our desires, we don't reflect. We don't fulfill our identity, our purpose, our calling. We fulfill our desires. All right. So, God splits the hollow place in the jawbone and water comes out. And what does Samson do with that?
He drinks.
He drinks. So he actually receives God's provision with acknowledgement that it's from God. And what happens to Samson? What does it say? What are the words? His strength returns. Except why they use strength there? Because it's not the same word as strength all throughout the thing. It's actually the word spirit. Mm-hmm. His spirit returns. His ability to receive Zoe returns. Opens up. And Samson is what?
Revived.
Or
resurrected.
Resurrected. Yep. That's what's happening here. And then what does he do?
He judges the word 20 years.
Oh, before that, it says he did one more thing.
Oh.
He names it.
He names it. He names. He returns to his calling, right? He names. And what does he name that place?
En-Hakor.
Anybody know what it means?
I bet you do.
Some point, guys, you need to be looking these up. It means the spring or the water of him who calls. He says, it is God who calls and God who provides life. He's naming God's worth here. It is God. En-Hakor. I don't know how to say that. He names God's worth. So we see this beautiful picture of Samson resurrected and his spirit, his pneuma, receiving Zoe, being led by Zoe. And now, as soon as he does that, he starts doing exactly what he's been made to do. Mm-hmm. Naming God's worth first. And so now we have, he judged Israel 20 years. And now we can think, oh, okay, now I know why he's in Hebrews, right? Because up till now, I don't have any reason to think why he's in Hebrews. So he judges Israel 20 years. Yay, end of story. Except what happens.
No, this is the part that we remember as a child.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that in Sunday school we teach his downward spiral rather than this. Why aren't we teaching this? And no, we don't even talk about that.
We don't even get it.
Yeah.
I didn't get that.
Okay, so what happens in our last chapter here? Is this our last chapter?
Yeah. He saw a prostitute.
Okay.
And on those felt boards, they didn't say she was a prostitute when we were little.
No, what did they say?
She was beautiful. She was
beautiful. Well, of course, this isn't Delilah yet.
No. Oh, yeah, right. Sorry.
So first, he sees a harlot and he goes into her, right? Like, enough with the marriage thing.
Let me just get my knees
met. Let me just pay for my knees met. Get my knees met, right? That's easier, right? So he sees a harlot and he goes into her.
So this is like the highlight of his life. Three verses and that's it.
Yeah. And what happens?
Then at midnight, he leaves and rips up the city gate and carries it to the top of the mountain.
Okay, I know it sounds kind of weird, but here's what's going on. Most likely, this has been a planned ambush. Mm-hmm. The harlot is out there because they know what attracts Samson, right? Mm-hmm. She attracts him, get them in, and the people at the gate are, okay, he's here now. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get him. But Samson, probably with a little bit left of this, all of a sudden gets up in the middle of the night. Can't imagine that. And he goes, and he takes the gates away. What would that do to the enemy?
They're vulnerable.
Yeah, he just now exposed them. So he exposes the enemies and makes them vulnerable. And unfortunately, probably not led by the Spirit, but who knows? Mm-hmm. It does accomplish God's purpose. And sometimes we just don't know whether God led him to do that or whether it was his desires. We do know that he likes to humiliate people. So it could be that, but we also know he just came off of that. Could be either. Not sure. That kind of ends that. It will play into what happens at the end, though. All right, so he thinks that's over. Now what does he do?
He meets Delilah.
Okay. By the way, where is he?
He's okay, I looked it up.
Yay!
The Valley of Sork means the place of choice vines.
Yes.
Choice vines.
Yes.
So he's back
in
the vineyards.
He's back in the vineyards. He's back in the vineyards. So all this time, he goes back to Philistine. So, but here's the thing. He's been revived. He's had success. Wow, this is great. I am invincible, right? I can go down there and not be... I remember having conversations with people about this, about saying, you know, if these are the places that you're tempted, you need to not be in those places. Oh, I can handle it, right? That's what I hear. I can handle it.
I'm the Lord's now.
Yeah.
I can do this.
I can handle it. Which, again, is Samson goes back to his... It's my strength. I am so strong. Look what I've done. I can handle this. So that's what we're going to see with Delilah, is a lot of playing because he thinks he can handle it. So he thinks he's invisible, or invincible.
So this prostitute from Gaza was not Delilah.
No. That's just an extra. Bonus. Now he goes to the... Yeah. A bonus, right. Okay. Now he goes to he finds Delilah, and it says he loves her.
I wonder if disease was an issue.
Seriously. I'm sure it was.
I'm sure it was.
We have him going to Delilah, and it says he loves Delilah. And the word there is what we would consider agape, for the Greek. It is that. But we need to think about who Samson is.
Yeah.
Is he love her, or does he love the idea of her because of what he does with her? Mm-hmm. What happens with Delilah and him? What does he start doing with her? Messing with her, right? He does exactly what he did back here with the groomsmen. He's playing with her. She comes and tells him exactly what she wants to do, right?
Now, not to mention probably good sex.
Probably a lot.
Because and she's beautiful.
Because she's beautiful, and because that's who Samson is, right? That's what he's led by. By the way, what's the name of Samson mean again?
Bright son.
The name Delilah.
He's attracted to beauty.
Ah, but the name Delilah means
darkness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He loved the dark.
But do you think he was trying to, like, self-correct again, too, though? Mm-hmm. Like, so the first time I had a wife, I just took her. I didn't love her. So, like, kind of almost, like, not take responsibility for his own actions anymore. Well, maybe if I love her, it'll be better.
Exactly.
And make those bad decisions.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he has the exact same behavior.
Same
behavior. Someone he loved than when he went in.
Because he's still on the wrong path, right? Because he's loving an enemy.
Yeah.
Remember,
right.
Whenever we see enemy here, it's our desires. He's our gods. He's loving what God said to destroy. So he's loving her, and he's going to use her in the same way he has always used people.
Yeah. Well, he's playing her, but she's playing with him.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Except she's not playing, right? Because she tells him.
Well, yeah, she is.
What was she offered
to afflict you?
Remember, she's a woman. She's not married. Probably living with Samson.
She's offered money.
How much money is she offered?
1,100 pieces of silver.
No.
Oh, each of them.
5,500 pieces of silver. Mm-hmm. Millions. Mm-hmm. Millions. Yeah. This is like being offered $1 billion today. 5,500 pieces of silver? The woman set. She's vulnerable. She's set. So she's not playing him because she tells him, I want to afflict you. Tell me how I can. And that's where the hubris of Samson comes in, right? Fine, go ahead and try.
Right, the pride.
Go ahead and try, the pride. Now we've got this pride problem Samson has not dealt with. So although he's turned his face at one point to God, we're coming back here. Remember we talked about how our path And our rhythm is not linear. It doesn't, you know, we think about this. We think we just get better and better and better. We follow God more and more and more, right? But is that true in your life?
No. No.
Is it not more like the waves?
Mm-hmm.
Back and forth, back and forth. There's progress, and there's definitely progress in Samson, but he's still back to his magnetic north. So it's not just his sexual appetite now. Now it's his pride. So it's Suke taking over, big time.
Well, Jill, with your whole exercise with the compasses, it reminds me, I don't know if you guys did it that day, that you don't just set your course once.
Right.
And
over.
They were saying that, like, you're just human. You're going to err as you move.
Right.
So you have to keep resetting it and resetting it.
Right.
Every, you know, so often there's so many steps, you got to keep making sure you actually are going north. Keep making sure.
Yep. Because, there's choices every day for us, right?
Yeah.
Every day. And it always has to be asked, am I choosing to fulfill my desires with this choice? Or am I choosing to fulfill my calling? With this choice, what am I choosing? Those are the choices I always have, even with the Spirit living in us. Samson had the Spirit coming on him, and even then, he was given the choice to follow his desires or his calling. And I think that's the thing we don't like about this, and the thing that we're uncomfortable with, is that even with God's Spirit, God still gives us choice.
Mm-hmm.
How will you use my Spirit? How will you use my power? I'm going to give you the choice. He gave it to Adam and Eve. He continues to give it. So very rarely do you hear the talk about the Spirit in Judges. And Judges is the one Old Testament book that the Spirit has talked about a lot. And we notice, with Gideon, this happened. Who else did the Spirit come on mightly? I can't remember. One other judge. And Samson. They almost always use it to follow their desires. And God allows that. But overall, God's still sovereign because he uses even those choices to get his purpose done.
Well, when we did the orienteering, he told us, he said, don't set your sights too far ahead. He said, see something real close, set it right there, get there, and readjust.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like we have to do that with our life.
Right.
Just set it close, get there, readjust.
Right. And that's a really good thing because what we always want to know is the end, right?
Right.
Like, how do I just get to where it's nice?
Mm-hmm.
We are always asking, God says, could you take the manna for today?
Mm-hmm. Don't take too much.
Don't take too much.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get off course.
Right.
Live in the present with me. Here I'm here. Remember we talked about, what was this in, I don't know, Matthew or something? We talked about the fact that when we're running the race, he's with you here, not
mm-hmm.
not there.
Mm-hmm.
He's with you here. And that's exactly it, Michelle. That's a perfect reminder of what we need to be doing, which Samson didn't do, right? I'm good now.
Right.
I'm good. And that's what we think, right? I got through that. God brought me through that. I acknowledge it was God. I'm good now. I'm going to go on my way. The problem is, I've made inroads in my brain that I go along with my magnetic north, right? And this is the danger of going along with your magnetic north, because it physiologically makes paths in your brain that you will begin to follow. It's much easier when you're riding a bike, right? If there's a little rut, what happens? You get in that rut, because that's what's been over and over and over again. You actually fall into that. It's much easier. So every time you choose your magnetic north, you're making an inroad in your brain. This is a habit. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to choose to follow my desire. I'm going to choose to follow. Why am I doing this? Why am I getting that piece of cake out of the refrigerator? Because I want it. I deserve it. I haven't had anything. All of these ideas. And then I make these paths in my brain. And then it becomes much harder to choose, well, God, what is my calling? My calling is to name worth, to tend, to make space, to multiply and flourish. Is me getting that piece of cake out of the refrigerator after I've had 3 cupcakes this morning, how is this going to help me in my calling? You ask yourself those questions, And sometimes we'll even go, yeah, it's not, but I'm going to have it anyway. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes we do that.
But I love the cupcake.
But I love the cupcake, exactly, right? And you don't want to keep me from pleasure, right? Yeah, exactly, exactly. So this mapping of Samson's life is the mapping of our life, right? And that's what God wants us to see, first of all, is you're no different than Samson. And yet, all underneath, we're going to have God working his will. And the times when we turn our face, reflecting Christ. So we have him playing games with Delilah. Mm-hmm. By the way, let's say Delilah is probably, what kind of an influence?
Negative.
Probably negative, negative influence, right? Which means those things that you love, that are magnets to you, are probably a negative influence for you as far as going on the right path, right? So what did God tell us to do with our gods and the things that lead us to
destroy
them? Destroy them, not keep them around. Oh, I can deal with it. I can have the cake in the refrigerator because it's in the refrigerator and I won't. And then it's always I, right? I. So we have him playing games with Samson. And notice the games revolve around that word tell again. Tell me, tell me, tell me. Uh-huh. Samson so far is always about not telling, right? Not telling, not telling, not telling. Same here. He does not tell, he does not tell, he does not tell. What have we noticed, though? That telling, when he does tell, when he does open his mouth, is it good or bad? It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. And we tell this story as if he shouldn't be telling, mm-hmm. right? Let's think about that. Should Samson not tell where his strength comes from?
Mm. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he should be. Mm-hmm. My God is my strength. Mm-hmm. My God has made me do all these things. Okay, first of all, he's talking to the enemy who also knows about God's strengths. And this God is pretty powerful. It says, if he says, my strength is my God, how are they going to destroy his God? That's going to be right. They're not. Mm-hmm. Telling should have been a good thing for Samson. He shouldn't have been. But see, it's his habit. It's his habit to not tell, to be independent, to not say, my strength is the Lord's strength. He's teasing her, right? Mm-hmm. And he really doesn't want her to know where his strength is. But it's really not about my strength is God, right? Mm-hmm. It's me, mm-hmm. right? It's me. So, of course, he plays the games, and he loses the game, doesn't he? Why does he lose the game?
He's annoyed to death.
He's annoyed to death, and he tells her, I want you to think about Samson. Does he believe that he can actually lose his strength?
No.
Probably not.
Why do you know that?
Because he tells her he expects to be able to.
Exactly. Shake it off like at any other time, right? Mm-hmm. He has forgotten where his strength comes from.
It's even his statement is still all about him.
All about him.
You know, yep. I'm special. I'm a Nazirite. It's not, you know, God has given me this strength.
Yes. So even though we had that wave of understanding that he's back to right where he was before, and his pride, his hubris, his presumption that that strength is going to be with me forever. What he does there by playing the games with Delilah and saying, my strength is in my hair. Is his strength in his hair?
No.
No.
No, it's not. His strength is not his hair. His strength is in the Lord. And he doesn't tell that. Mm-hmm. That is it's not you, God. I'm turning away from you. you are not my strength. So finally, when someone's asking him his strength and he finally tells, he lies. And to him, he's telling the truth. He is so unaware of where his strength is coming from. And so because he turns away from God, God departs from him, right? The spirit, at least, the strength of him departs. God
so
is still there.
Was he turning away from God in his connection with Delilah? Because this is fairly consistent with other things he's done.
Definitely. He's definitely on the path of his magnetic path, right?
Right.
But even on his magnetic path, he's feeling the spirit, and here we know that he turned his face toward. The issue comes when he denies that his strength is God's.
Okay.
So that's where the issue comes.
By saying it was in his hair and
right.
not from God.
Right.
And that's why the strength left.
Yes. Yeah. So does that make sense?
I always feel like in those situations, like God's almost making him honest. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, it's like, oh, okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's
exactly
you know what, I mean?
What God is doing. Yes. Okay. That's how you want to play it? All right. We'll play it your way. And this is what we see all through Judges, right? He lets them go until he goes, all right, you want to play with the enemy? Fine. I'll let you play with the enemy and see how life does not come from that. You want to play with the Moabites who are all about self-satisfaction? Fine. Go ahead and try to live a life full of self-satisfaction. It'll end in death. And he says that every time. That's what he's doing with Samson here. You think that's where your strength comes from? Okay, great. We'll take it away. We'll see. We'll see how you feel about where your strength comes from.
Jill, how is that? Maybe I shouldn't ask this question, but how is that different from like that feels transactional?
Oh, you mean God's?
Yeah,
God's
like
thing?
You're. And I know that. Like, I guess it's maybe just him stepping back and letting it
right
happen. I guess
it's actually a gift, right? Because without that, without God saying, I'm going to give you what you want. They will, right, I gave you choice. You chose that. Okay, I'll give it to you.
Okay, like I'm letting you.
I'm letting you have that. My purpose is that you would return to your calling and fulfillment. And the only way you're going to do that is if I give you what you want.
And you see the death.
Right, and you recognize that and live death so that you actually come back and choose life. It's not a guarantee, though, right?
Right.
Because sometimes we'll still choose death. And God's willing to take that risk. Because more than anything, he wants it to be a choice. So that our life is a choice to follow, not made to. And a lot of times we want him just to make us, right? And yet he never will. So even when it says, I will give you my spirit will cause you to walk in my ways. But we've seen this, right? We still get the choice. He still gives it, but he's going to give us opportunity after opportunity to live and experience whether our choice is to follow a magnetic path or him leading north is going to give us life. He wants us to experience. He wants us to cry out, Father, rather than him tell us, right?
The design from the beginning for Samson's life was for him to surrender his will for his life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it was only going to take him losing the strength for him to be able to do that.
Right.
Like, in the end, the only way was for him to finally, that was the only way for him to finally get to the place where he could surrender his life.
Right.
Most physically and
right.
spiritually. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, without God taking it away in that moment, he wouldn't have reached a point of surrender, which is the point of life. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yep.
I don't think God says fine in the way that we think fine, though.
No, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Not with that attitude, right? Because that's our attitude.
I think, yeah, that was
fine.
Like my parenting way of saying
yeah,
fine.
Right.
But I don't know
right.
if God says it.
No, because remember, God is following covenant. And covenant is about, I want to give you the fullness of who I've made you. I want that connection. And I will do whatever it takes. And it's going to take this. Okay. It's going to take this. I think what we need to see in Samson's silence throughout is that when he's silent, it's always about his connection with God. So he was silent back and not telling his parents about killing, about the lion. because of his connection with God, right? So it's all, every time he's silent, it's about his connection with God. I don't want to put out there that I'm connected to God. And the problem with our silence, let alone Samson's silence, about our connection with God, is it allows us to think our strength comes from us. So it allows us to think our abilities come from us. So instead of acknowledging when you've done something that is in your gifting, instead of acknowledging to yourself and to others, this is God's spirit in me. When I don't do that, I just give myself little notches on my cane that say, I did pretty good there. And then again, I did pretty good there. And then again, I did pretty good there. Because I'm not keeping accountable with, oh, the Spirit was doing that in me. The Spirit was doing that in me. So keeping silent about my connection with God and His Spirit giving me the power and ability lets me claim my good works for my own. And that ends up being like Samson in his pride. I forget that my strength is from God. Of course, it fails to give God glory. And the problem with that is that then it fails to invite others to join with God. And in fact, it does just the opposite. When I am silent about my connection with God, it humiliates others. Mm-hmm. How does it do that?
Yeah, because you feel like, oh, I'm not as good as they are.
Exactly. It's all the way back to Samson again. I have knowledge, I have power, I have ability that you don't have. But when I acknowledge that it's the Spirit, it's something they have too. It makes it us, right? When I don't acknowledge my connection with God, it makes an us in them, in my abilities, in whatever I do well. Does that make sense? Okay. That's the problem with Samson is, and that's why if you go throughout this, you would see one of the big keywords is tell. Tell, don't tell. Tell, don't tell. So, silence. That's his decision there. We better hurry through. We don't even get to do what we normally do. Samson gets his hair cut, right?
Gets his eyes put out. He gets gouged down.
He's changed. His eyes are gouged out. And he's humiliated, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it comes back to Samson, what he did with taking the gates away. What did he do?
He made the city vulnerable.
He exposed them, right? The Philistines have been wanting to kill him, right? Over and over again. Now they capture him, and what do? They don't kill him.
He's
why not?
Forced labor.
Yeah, because they want to humiliate him. Exactly what he did to them.
Right.
Revenge is still playing here.
Right.
We're going to humiliate you, and we're going to chain you to go around in circles. To go over and over and over again. I mean, literarily, you can just keep going with, wow, he's going to go in his own cycle over and over and over again. He's chained, his eyes are gouged out, which is what he used to make his paths, right? Mm-hmm. That was his downfall. And then it says they called him out to entertain him. Yeah. So you need to understand from this culture's point of view, what that would mean is that it doesn't mean he just stood there and they were mocking him. It means they took off his clothes.
Oh.
It means he stood out there naked for all of them to see.
So he's like a weird circus act.
A weird circus act. But what's he been doing all along?
Humiliating
others.
Else, yeah.
Exposing others. Taking the clothes off of other women, right? Of women all over the time. His nakedness is what he was actually being driven by.
Yeah.
Right? And so we have God at the end saying, Samson, this is what you lived for. You lived for your eyes, you lived for your nakedness, you lived for humiliating others and your pride. I'm going to take that all away from you. And in taking all of that away from him,
yeah.
What happens to Samson?
He calls the Lord.
So in his whole story, he calls to the Lord twice. What precipitates his calling?
His need.
His vulnerability. Do you see The strength of Samson is actually found in his weakness. Mm-hmm. That's when he calls on the Lord, this is where my strength comes from. And so we have the very end of him calling on the Lord, and what does he ask the Lord? What does he say to the Lord? Look at those.
Please remember me and strengthen me just this time, O God.
Okay, read before that. What does it say?
O Lord God.
O Lord God. It's the first time he actually calls him Lord God.
And I have sovereign Lord.
Sovereign Lord. What he does right there is, you are sovereign. You are the Lord. You are the one I'm supposed to be following. So as soon as we have him completely in need, completely humiliated, this is when his strength comes.
He still seems like he's looking for revenge, though, instead of like God's plan of wiping out the
world. We'll talk about that in a second. So, first of all, he recognizes that God's sovereign, right? A decision. Where does his strength come from?
His wing on God.
Yeah. From God, right? Is that, so he, what is, what's the, read it again.
Please strengthen me just this time.
Okay, so you strengthen me, right? He knows that the strength is coming from God. What does he need?
What'd you say? What does he need?
Yeah, what does he need?
You want strength, right?
Strength.
Yeah.
And then what does it say? What does it say?
So he can avenge the Philistines.
Mm-hmm. Does it say, so I can avenge the Philistines?
That I may at once be avenged.
That I may be avenged. It doesn't say that I may avenge, but that I may be. It's passive. Right? Okay. What does that mean?
That God.
That you, God, would take up my cause.
Okay.
Not me. Right? That you, God, would do this.
Okay.
And then what does he do?
Brings down the whole place.
Yeah.
But what does he say before that?
Let me die with the Philistines.
And that's the conclusion of Samson's life, is I realize I need to die to my desires leading me. I need to die in order that others may live. And of course, so we have this picture, once again, a place of need, a place where he actually goes back to following true north. And we have a picture of Christ here, do we not? Mm-hmm. Because how was Samson?
Yeah.
Standing like this, saying, let me die, so that others can live.
And it's interesting, it says he killed many more when he died than while he lived.
Exactly.
Right? So with the way it all came down.
And not only many more in number, who did he kill?
All of the big wigs.
All of the big wigs. All of the lords, so the five Philistine lords, plus all of the upper echelon of the Philistine community. So that, remember at the beginning when the angel comes to Manoah and Mrs. Manoah and says, he will begin to deliver Israel. This is the first time the Philistines really have any chink in their armor. And it'll take them a while to build back up. Not until Saul, Samuel, and David, where we have the Philistines a big force again. And they will be a big force because we haven't destroyed them all. But he begins with this.
But it also what was set out in the beginning of the story. I mean, in the beginning of Samson's story, God was saying, I want to do this thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then at the end of the story, Samson finally kind of is in line, finally.
Right.
With like what God is wanting to accomplish.
Right.
He's willing to surrender his life for that, for the will of God.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So if we had time, what we would do is do exactly what we do with our maps, is we would look for the keywords in the events of his life, and we would find three. We would find tell, we would find strength, and we would find die or kill. So from Samson, from the word strength in Samson's story, what do we learn about strength?
Comes from God.
Right. Strength comes from God. And strength comes from our weakness. our vulnerability to let God lead, to let Zoe lead. That's weakness. That's where our strength comes from. Die or kill? What do we learn about that?
It's where life comes from.
It's where life comes from. Do we have any responsibility to kill?
Our self, our desire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We kill our desire leading us, right?
Right.
So it's not desire that's bad, it's desire being used as the leader. Okay?
Because God put holy desire
yep.
in us.
Yep. That's what we're going to end with. So kill, tell, strength, and tell. Tell, what do we learn about tell? Yeah, tell our stories. Tell God's story, right? Tell God's story, God's connection. Without telling that, we completely obscure what God is doing. We obscure the invitation. We separate and humiliate others into them not being able to do things. What's God doing with Samson? First of all, he's giving Samson his spirit freely. He gives his spirit freely and lets us choose how we will use the power of the Spirit. We can use it to follow our desires and fulfill our desires. God is taking a risk and saying, I want you to take the Spirit, but I'm going to let you choose how you use that power. I think that's a thing that we're really uncomfortable with. Because mm-hmm. we think, if I have the Spirit, then I will just do good, right? But is it true in your life?
No.
The Spirit lives in you, right? And are you always following on fulfilling your calling? Or are you sometimes following your desires?
I think that's probably... It just seems like I've heard more the opposite of that.
I know.
That it's the negative part, that I certainly couldn't have the Spirit if I'm doing that.
Right.
So then
right.
yeah. you feel totally,
yeah.
oh my gosh, you question your connection with God.
Yes.
So to me, yes. like that has been so much the message out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if that's true... What do we do with Samson's story?
Exactly. Well, yeah. For me, it's been, what do I do with
With a your lot story, of these right? Stuff. Exactly.
Yeah.
God's exactly.
Mm-hmm. And in sharing, there's yep. always been that difficulty.
Yes. Karen, what were you going
to say? I was going to say that ties back to the question at the beginning, because frequently when you give a child money, I'll give you this, but you better use it wisely.
Yes.
And, you know, we're saying candy and all this stuff. It's like, ugh.
Right.
Money.
Right. Right. And in fact, I mean, how many times do we have the opportunity to give someone money or something, but we kind of know their tendencies, so we go, well, I remember doing this. Oh, I have a relative that would probably use the money very unwisely, so I'll make sure to give him a gift card for a certain place, so he's very limited, right? But that's not a gift. That is, I'm in control. What I'm going to give you. That's not who God is. And isn't that amazing that God goes, yeah, I know you're magnet. I know. But I also know that what I have to offer is even better. And I'm willing to let you choose. So God's giving his spirit freely and letting us choose. Will we choose to use his power to fulfill our desires or to fulfill our calling? Which means asking what Michelle had talked about every day, saying, here I am, Lord, here you are. Would you lead me today? This choice I have to make today, am I making it so that I feel good, so that I feel comfortable, so that I feel safe? Or am I making it because it will either enable me or it will name someone it's worth? It will tend someone. It will make space. And the making space is the hard part. Those are the battles for people to flourish, for me to flourish. If I asked that even once a day, how many more times would we go toward true north? But here's the other thing. God uses Samson's need to correct his path. He always uses his need, his thirst. He uses at one point... And his blindness, right? His need, his desires not being met is what God uses to correct his path. Which is interesting, right? Because we are always asking for our desires to be met. We talked about that last week, right? About how do we pray? We're always asking, oh, would you make this sure this happens and this happens and this happens? And we think that the way that God loves us is to give us those things. Mm-hmm. And yet God says, if I don't meet your desires, I will help correct your path. Which is actually what fasting is all about. We won't get there today, but...
So, Jill, is it safe to assume that Samson is redeemed and in glory?
Absolutely.
His very bumpy...
Yep. We do know that because he's in Hebrews 11. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of the judges are, actually.
And so that's really a story of hope.
It's absolutely a story. And here's why it's hope. Because we think we still have the transactional idea, right? Mm-hmm. If I follow God well... then I deserve to be with him. And God keeps saying, no, I chose you.
Right.
You're with me. You may screw it all up, but you're not going to screw up my plan. Mm-hmm. That's hope and also rest, is it not? Mm-hmm. In fact, what God is doing is he's not saying, hey, I want you to follow me because I really need you to be my image. God doesn't need us. God wants us to follow him and his lead because he wants us to actually have pleasure. The pleasure in participating with him, the pleasure of being safe with him, being comfortable with him, the pleasure of having his power create life. He actually wants us to follow him because we could have our desires of our heart met. And the desires of our heart are what he's put in there. And that is to fulfill who we are as image bearers. That's what God's doing in Samson's life. As rocky as it looks and as horrible as it looks, we still see these little points, right? Where God mm-hmm. brought him to his knees so that he might have life. Showed him his weakness so that he would grab onto him. Our battles, our desires not being met, are cause for celebration. God has not left us to our own devices and our own bearings. He's correcting our paths so that we continue to walk north. Father, thank you that you don't leave us to our own devices, that you continually call us to the path of true north, of the one thing in this world that does not change, and that is you. Lord, we pray that this week, when our desire is not met, that we would turn our face toward you and celebrate and say thank you, that in our desire not being met, the desire of our heart is that we be with you, that we enjoy the satisfaction of being whole, connected to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Go forth into the world in peace, rejoicing in the power of the Spirit.
Thanks be to God. And did you notice what that says?
I know.
Rejoicing in the power of the Spirit.
I'm so orange.